Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. If Apple shifted tens of billions of dollars of revenues away from its home turf, what happens when you decide to rent out your home turf, your house, apartment, or bedroom to the occasional tourist or visitor? It's a booming business coordinated online by companies like Airbnb and HomeAway. But now a fight is brewing over whether such arrangements are entirely legal, whether or not the cities of those locations are missing out on certain kinds of tax collection possibilities. A New York judge recently fined Airbnb $2,400 this week for renting out a room to his apartment, an Airbnb user, rather. We want to talk in this half hour about these new kinds of arrangements and whether or not they are following the letter of the law and what's being missed, if anything, in these arrangements. We're starting out our conversation with David Hantman, who is the global head of public policy for Airbnb. Mr. Hantman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us first, for those who aren't familiar with these arrangements, what exactly Airbnb allows people to do?
We're a platform that allows people to come together and rent out their homes or apartments to other people from around the world. A lot of people go on vacation for a week and they rent it out to somebody else. Some people stay in their home and rent out an extra room or a couch or an air mattress, as the company started. And that's it. It's a pretty simple thing, but it's the exciting parts of it are we have a rating system and allow people to really pick, safer, better guests.
And how many people? How many units of housing or rooms are available, say, in the city of San Francisco? How many people are participating?
It's certainly in the thousands. I don't know the number as of today, and we're growing so fast. But there are a lot of people who do this in every big city. So we're in 35,000 cities.
Now, as you say, it seems like a simple proposition. You make your room available. It gives people a place to stay, often at perhaps a good rate and a different kind of environment. But after that, it gets tricky. And a lot of people are making the argument, in New York City in particular, that in essence, this is getting around a lot of different regulations and that you're, in essence, participating illegally in the hotel business. How do you respond to that concern?
I think there are some valid concerns about some of the activity that's gone on in the past, well before Airbnb. New York passed a law to address illegal hotels. There were companies that were buying up entire apartment buildings or 30 or 40 apartments on the same block and turning them into short-term rentals. And that is actually a real problem. It takes affordable housing off the market. It really changes the nature of a neighborhood to have that many apartments that are just constantly churning over. What Airbnb does is very different. We allow regular people to take their own homes. About 90% of the people who do this on Airbnb, it's their own home. And they rent it out on an occasional basis, you know, a few days, a few weeks, a year. It's not something that happens all the time. It's not something that happens in an entire building. And so it's a very different kind of activity. It's not much different than when you just have guests over. We facilitate the transaction, and people now can charge for it. But it's really a different kind of thing, and we have a community of users and hosts who really build friendships through this activity. So it's very different than a hotel, and it's very different from an illegal hotel.
Are you then sympathetic or supportive of what David Hsu, the president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, who we'll hear from in just a little bit, is proposing, which is to allow this to take place, but to limit the number of days that you can actually engage in these sorts of relationships?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of details in every city that we're working with. There's different sort of there's a push and pull, so you have to strike the right balance. So without seeing exactly what Supervisor Hsu has proposed, we have worked with him and made our case about this, and I think he's leaning towards limiting this to primary residences, which are it's most of our users, which I think is a smart idea. And then as far as the number of days, if it's in your primary home, you can only do it for a certain number of days anyway, right? I mean, you live there. So our users tend to do this for, up to a few months a year. Maybe they go away for the summer and they want to do this, or they go away on vacation every couple of weeks, or, they work in a couple of different cities. So they go back and forth a lot, and then they rent their place out when they're gone. But I think, a cap, that makes sense. It's fine.
What about the question, lastly, of taxes? A lot of attention has now being placed on this question that in the city of San Francisco, for example, the treasurer's office has ruled that if you use one of these spaces through an organization like Airbnb, that's subject to the hotel tax. Yet that doesn't seem to be very often posted. I know when I explored looking into one of these places when I was going to New York last year that no one said anything about collecting a hotel tax. Is that something that you have to be more stringent about?
Yeah, we're certainly looking into this and discussing this with a number of different governments, obviously. We know we have to deal with the tax issue. It will be a lot easier to deal with that tax issue once there's a sort of an open, fair, legal system for short-term rentals. The rules vary so much city to city and even within cities. You know, in San Francisco, it's completely legal to rent in certain buildings, you know, smaller buildings, and it's less clear in bigger buildings. And so I think the key for us first is to address this issue so that our hosts know what the law is and that they can obey the law, and that if there's going to be restrictions on the number of days or whatever, let's put that in. But let's create a system that's transparent and clear, and then we can, I think, address the tax issue after that. I think there are strong arguments why people who come in and stay on Airbnb are not the same as hotel guests. You're really just replacing someone who already lives in their home, who already pay taxes. So garbage collection and streets and everything that people pay taxes for in a city has really been paid for by the resident, as opposed to a tourist who comes in and stays at a hotel who's really just using the services of the city and not otherwise paying taxes. But I think it makes sense to have this discussion, and we know we have to talk about it, and we're open to it.
David Hammond, thanks for leading us off in this discussion. He's the global head of public policy for Airbnb. David Hammond, thanks for joining us. We're joined now by David Chu, who's president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and as just mentioned, is working on a proposal in this arena. David Chu, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us on.
And Tomio Jaron joins us as well, reporter for Forbes, who has written about this issue extensively as well. Tomio Jaron, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, David Chu, you heard David Hampman say that he knows this conversation has to take place, but he was also saying there is a distinction to be made between spaces that are available for customers through Airbnb and what hotels do. Do you agree that there really is a distinction and that we ought to treat them differently?
Been a really new and interesting development in recent years, the concept of shareable housing that really is being made possible because of the fact that we have new 21st century technologies that allow strangers to potentially come to an agreement to visit someone's home when that would not have been allowed, or actually something that we could have done 10, 15, 20 years ago. And the laws that we have on the books really don't envision this type of activity. And so what my office is trying to do is sort of craft public policy that deals with what is now in many instances activity that is not technically legal, but activity that I think a lot of folks understand, which is the idea of should you be allowed to open up your home, open up a room, rent out your couch for someone to stay on. That being said, there are public policy concerns that arise when that happens. We have a lot of landlord-tenant rules that we have in place for a reason, to make sure that we're allowing permanent residents in San Francisco to find housing in a city that has very significant demand. We also ask companies like hotels that are housing our 16 million visitors a year to help pay for city services when those visitors come in, and I think it's important for us to ask hosts from this new shareable economy to help pay for a fair share of those expenses that the city incurs as well. So there are policy concerns that arise, and I think we need to craft legislation to take all this into account and hopefully balance all these interests.
So what exactly needs to change? Starting with the question of what's illegal now. If I have an apartment and I want to do this, is it currently not legal for me to do that? What has to change to make that behavior legal, but also limited in a way so that I don't become sort of an amateur hotel operator?
So if you live in a building that has three or fewer units, you can actually rent your unit short term without limitations. But if you're in a building that's four units or more, we have current laws that prohibit tenants or property owners in those larger buildings from renting those apartments for fewer than 30 days at a time. Now, this was a law that was created, you know, three decades ago to protect our very limited and much needed housing stock. But as I think many people understand, if you have working families or if you have students who might be traveling during the summer break, or folks that are traveling for work who could use a little additional income to help pay for rent while they're away, I think a lot of folks would agree that that those might be circumstances where this new type of economic activity might make sense. That being said, what we don't want to see happen is are folks who are either owners or living in these units or buildings turning these units into year-round bed and breakfasts or mini hotels. And so the legislation is really trying to get at that balance,
right,
to make sure that we're allowing permanent residents to stay in San Francisco, but when they may not be in their apartment or in their housing for shorter periods of time, to have some ability to do that.
David Hsu, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Tell me what you're on at Forbes. As you've reported on this issue, is this part of really this wider conversation that people are having now about the so-called shareable economy and the effort to kind of monetize anything you can? And is this a question of our just the law trying to catch up with culture?
Very much so. I think there's a whole new generation, especially the younger millennial generation, that's really used to sharing things and not as interested in, say, buying a car. They'd rather just rent a car or get a ride sharing. Or for hotels, they're used to they're really interested in staying in an Airbnb with another person, learning about them. And so even with buying music or videos, they'd rather just get Spotify or stream it on their phone. So I think there's a really change in the concept of ownership, especially among the new generation. And people don't really see owning something as a necessary thing as it may have been in the past.
And what are the consequences of that in your reporting you've discovered in terms of how it's impacting housing stock or how it's affecting the availability of spaces for people to rent?
There is a legitimate concerns that Supervisor Hsu raised about tenants groups are concerned that if whole buildings turn into Airbnbs, then there's even less housing for rentals, which is really, you know, a big problem in San Francisco as well as Manhattan and other places. So that's a legitimate concern in terms of having enough housing stock. But I think that this sort of idea of recapitalizing an asset that you had and making money on it is a trend that's really going to increase, and people really need to think about that, businesses and governments, because it's just happening.
Let's open up our conversation to all of you. What do you think of this trend in how we go about making our business arrangements, this idea of the shareable economy, as Tomio Duran was describing? Do you do this yourself? Do you rent out a room? Are you someone who has taken advantage of it? We'd like your participation as we discuss this issue over the next 20 minutes. 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can post your thoughts on our Facebook page or our website as well. Wendy posts this on Facebook. Jaron Lanier warned about the lure of the casual economy and said that this is what third world countries have as work. We should be very careful before we throw out regulations for this opportunity, quote unquote. As far as Airbnb goes, if hotel taxes go uncollected, San Francisco will be out of funds that we use for the arts and many other things, because that's where the hotel tax money goes. Interesting post. What do you make of that, David Hsu?
Well, I certainly think that when we have 16 million visitors a year to San Francisco, and as a city, we incur significant costs for police, for transit, to clean our streets, to make sure that our tourists are coming to visit one of the most amazing cities in the world, we ask folks who are benefiting from this economically, and in particular our hotels, to pay a hotel tax to help us with those costs. And I think it's reasonable to ask folks who benefit from the economic activity that we're talking about today to also pay their fair share as well.
Don from San Ramon writes, what are the homeowner insurance aspects of this, of renting to strangers? I see a parallel between this and the car sharing movement. My auto insurer has specifically stated that coverage is not provided in such arrangements. What have you discovered about that, Tomio Duran, about some of the safety concerns as well as insurance issues?
Right. In terms of the insurance, both Airbnb and some of the ride sharing companies have implemented most of them have implemented $1 million guarantees. It's not officially insurance in the Airbnb case, but they've given a $1 million guarantee that if someone comes in and does something to your apartment or house, they'll cover that. So that's one part of it. In terms of the safety, that's an issue that, you know, is ongoing. But I think one good thing about Airbnb and ride sharing is that they verify the identity of people coming to stay in your house, which a lot of hotels don't even do. So that's another good thing about it.
Let's hear what our listeners are thinking about on this subject. Jan joins us first from Petaluma. Jan?
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I was just going to say that my husband and I are Airbnb users, and it's interesting. The gentleman just said something about they don't vet people who stay in hotels, and we've had way more problems with, you know, people next to us in a hotel room than we've had with any Airbnb situation. And the other thing I was going to say is that we are not candidates who would stay in a hotel. We're not going to go ahead and pay the bed tax and the taxes and all that. We wouldn't be able to really afford it. So consequently, we can do Airbnb, and it's more affordable and way more enjoyable.
Jen, thanks. Thanks for your observation. Anne writes in, as someone who hosts people through Airbnb, she writes, my listing got picked as a filming location by Academy of Art University in San Francisco. That took place recently. Currently, we have another filming takes place. I've also been having guests come and coming back for at least 3 weeks, for the last 3 weeks, and actually have been turning reservations away due to the volume. Not only is this venture profitable, but I also get to enjoy all different cultures and people coming from all around the world right here in the comfort of my own home. I mean, it sounds, David Chu, like there's lots of good that come from this, but are you also concerned about this kind of unknown shadow economy that's taking place, both in terms of, as a city supervisor, the revenue you may be missing, but about sort of a not really having a tight enough look at what these arrangements provide?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is right now there is a bit of the shadow economy going on. We know that there are likely thousands of folks who are engaged in this activity already in San Francisco, and yet under our laws, much of this activity is technically illegal. And so part of what we're looking to do is to bring this activity out into the light and to set some clear rules that balance the interests that we're talking about to make sure that folks are not taking advantage of the situation and either as tenants or landlords profiting at the expense of potentially permanent residents in San Francisco. So that's an issue we're really looking at. But as long as either a tenant or an owner is a permanent resident who actually lives in the building or in an apartment for much of the year, I do think we want to create some legal space to allow this to happen, but to make sure it's regulated, to make sure that the folks who are coming are not disturbing our neighborhood quality of life, to make sure that they're being part of the San Francisco community that we love so much.
Alex in San Francisco has our next thought. Alex, go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, I just want to mention that I've been using Airbnb. I live in Foster City, so I have a lot of people from Visa and other companies. It's been great. But I just did my taxes, and I had to report somehow Airbnb reports to the IRS that, you know, I'm getting money, I guess. So, yeah, you indeed pay taxes.
Okay, so as someone who rents out space through Airbnb, you are paying taxes. All right, Alex, thank you. Tell me, Jordan, is there a sort of consumer watch list that you think people who participate in Airbnb ought to consider? Is it kind of the Wild West, or what sort of things, if you're going to use one of these services, what ought you be thinking about?
Well, one of the great things about these services, Airbnb and others, is that they have a pretty good rating and review system. Which was built like eBay, which pioneered this. So you can really learn a lot about the person, where they work, what they do, what type of guests are they clean. So that's one thing to really look for. If you're going to go stay in one of these places, look for ones that have great reviews and have people saying good things about that host.
So you're getting more information than you might on Craigslist, for example.
Oh, yeah, much more than a place like Craigslist.
And to Nancy in San Francisco. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi there. I just want to share my experience. I have both been an owner of a small building that's four units and less, that's under rent control, that has very, very strict controls over how much rent annually a property owner can raise. And I have another property at my home that's on VRBO, which is like Airbnb. And so I am a strong believer in the ability of a homeowner or a condo owner to use this Airbnb or VRBO facilities, but not tenants in rent-controlled properties.
Nancy, thanks. Thanks for the distinction. Here's a key point that one listener writes in to, and I'd like you to respond to, David Chu. This individual writes, David Hantman was misleading. That's the individual from Airbnb on we had at the top of the program when he said that people rent their houses only when they're away on vacation. People actually rent their second, third, and fourth bedrooms, and many have other small cottages that they rent out 365 days a year. Is it that latter behavior, David Chu, that you most want to make sure you're able to regulate?
That is definitely what we are interested in trying to deal with, because clearly in San Francisco, where the rental stock is so scarce, demand is so high, and we've seen in recent years too many tenants who've been evicted. Part of what we want to do is ensure that folks who want to live here in San Francisco permanently have the opportunity to do that. And unfortunately, if you have an owner who turns a space into a 365-day a year bed and breakfast or hotel, or on the flip side, if you have tenants who lease spaces but then decide to move in with their friends and rent out their space 365 days a year and potentially make profit over and above what our rent control laws allow, these are the types of activities that we're really trying to get at. Again, we're hoping that the focus of this activity will rest with permanent residents in San Francisco, folks who actually live here for much of the year, but when they want to travel for work or go out on the summer break or the family wants to go away for Christmas, there might be an opportunity right. for this type of activity.
And in your reporting, Tommy O'Jaron, do you have a sense of how much of that behavior that people are being critical of, people who rent out, you know, 365 days a year? Do you have a sense of how the frequency of them?
I don't know the proportion. I know there's a significant proportion who do that, but there's also a lot who only do it when they're out of town because they don't, you know, they'd rather just leave the whole place to other people. So there is a significant proportion of both.
And let's pause for a moment because we want to remind you that you are listening to Forum and that this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. And let's take another call. Hillary joins us next in Oakland. Hillary, go ahead.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I'm an Airbnb host. I have been for about 10 months now. And I just want to say that I would not have been able to keep my home if I wasn't able to do this because my house was underwater and I needed some income to help me pay the mortgage. Hmm. And so I have a two-bedroom, two-bathroom home, small home in Oakland, and it's close to BART. And I have guests who come and stay in the spare bedroom and bathroom. And I wouldn't have been able to keep my home. I would have had to do a short sale and walk away.
And how many days a year would you estimate you do that, Hillary?
Well, I could fill it full time. I mean, there's that much interest. But I don't because I don't have a roommate because I have out-of-town family and out-of-town friends who
right.
I'd like to have that spare room for. So I probably, I don't know, probably 10 months out or 10 week, 10 days out of each month is I'm renting it out.
And Hillary, thanks. Thanks for making that point. It's an interesting one, David Chu, because here's someone who is able to keep her home because of doing this, but maybe pushing the edges of the kind of activity that you'd like to see, because that's about 120 days a year, and you're trying to limit this to no more than half that.
Well, we're trying to figure out what that right balance is, and I think certainly everyone would agree that allowing these scarce units of housing to be used year-round, that's a little too much, but saying that this activity shouldn't happen at all is on the other extreme. And so this is why I've been working with a variety of stakeholders in San Francisco to try to find what that right balance is. But the basis of the legislation is to say that you at least need to be a permanent resident who spends a good chunk of the year living in a building, living in your unit, living in your house yourself.
Which Hillary does. She's just doing this in addition as a way to keep her home. Hillary, thanks for the call. Let's take a call next from John in Berkeley. John, go ahead.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to say this is kind of a bird's eye view of what I see as a balancing act the city council is doing between attracting higher level, you know, young tech workers and still maintaining a rent market that's affordable for people that can't afford those prices. And I'd like to Mr. Chu, to comment also on one, what impact you think all the high-level income properties, rental properties that are coming online now, i.e. the ones that are 3,000 plus for single-person rental dwellings, has on this discussion. But also to point out the fact that the majority of people that are participating in this, I'm an Airbnb host and I stay in other places via Airbnb when I travel. The majority of people doing this are not doing this to turn a profit or a heady profit at that. I mean, they're doing it out of necessity in this economy just to keep things afloat. And I'll take my comments up here. Thank you.
John, thank you. Supervisor Chu?
So I certainly agree with the perspective that you just raised, as well as the previous caller, that there are lots of working families, working folks who could really use the income to help make the rent. And if they didn't have it, there might be a greater possibility that they wouldn't be able to continue to live in our high-cost city in San Francisco or within the Bay. I'm very sympathetic to that. But on the other hand, we have certainly heard from folks that again, whether it be on the tenant side or on the owner side, who are using this primarily as a way to make money. And so part of what we need to do with this legislation is to balance being able to hopefully allow for the type of economic activity that allows working folks to stay in our expensive cities, but not necessarily creating economic activity that is simply about allowing someone to profit significantly in the equivalent of a hotel market.
And David Chulas, where does your proposal currently stand? When might it be voted upon by your colleagues on the Board of Supervisors?
We've been working on it for a number of months. It's my hope that in the coming weeks we will have something that we can introduce at the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and then through the typical legislative process, it'll probably take a couple of months to be considered by my colleagues in committee and in public forums where members of the public can come and give us their perspectives on how we ought to balance the different issues that are involved here.
And again, briefly, that's your goal, is to make this practice flourish, but not to the greater detriment of the overall housing market in San Francisco?
Well, I think what I describe it as would like to ensure that the activity that is currently illegal, we would allow some of that to happen, but in a regulated way to make sure that our neighborhood quality of life is being taken into account, to make sure that current balance when it comes to protecting tenants and the balance between landlords and tenants, that is being considered, as well as hopefully to ensure that folks who are benefiting from this economic activity are paying some of their fair share of the impact of this economic activity with visitors to San Francisco.
And we'll have to hold it there. David Chu, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Tomio Duran, reporter with Forbes. Thanks both very much for your participation in our program. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.